Happy Friday, everybody. Thanks so much, as always, for downloading or streaming the Be Our Guest podcast. So glad you're here and hope that you're not listening on an empty stomach. We're going to talk about the best of 2018 food and wine with Chef Todd. He's the expert. He's been down there and checked it all out for us. So stand by for that. First, a word from our sponsors. That includes our friends over at the Magic for Less Travel. Of course, they are a platinum earmarked agency, which means they are the best of the best to get you down there this year. Don't wait till 2019, Food and Wine. There's still plenty of time to get down there this fall. The festival goes through mid-November, and there's some rooms available. There's some great discounts. Just, you know, go down there. Check it out. Eat all the food, drink all the drinks, and have a great time. Go over and have fun at the Halloween party. And if you're thinking about going here for the festival or anytime in 2019, work with the great agents over at the Magic for Less. Check them out. Drop by themagicforless.com today. While you're there, fill out that free no obligation quote. And please let them know you heard about them here on the Be Our Guest podcast. Again, they're over at themagicforless.com. Again, thanks to everybody who continues to support the Be Our Guest podcast in the easiest way possible. You know you're going to probably shop on Amazon this week. Bookmark the site, brguestpodcast.com/Amazon. Go in through that link, and anything you purchase does help support the show. Thanks again to everybody who does this. It really does help us cover the bandwidth and the hosting as the show continues to grow, and we can't thank you enough for that. Again, please use our Amazon affiliate link. It's brguestpodcast.com/Amazon.
Ready to take a trip to the world? You found the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. This is where your memories come front and center on our podcast stage.
Welcome to episode 1384 of the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rallman from BeOurGuestPodcast.com. I'm one of the great agents over at the Magic for Less Travel. Happy Friday to you. Thanks so much for joining us here for some food and wine talk. We're going to have a good time, but grab a snack. Grab some pork rinds or some Fritos or something. I don't know. Wherever you are. Pork rinds are good. My father-in-law, that's his favorite thing.
That's the first thing you went with.
You know what? I could have said Funyuns. Funyuns are pretty good, too, but just don't come around me because you'll have some wicked breath. So just saying, grab your favorite snack. It doesn't matter. We won't judge. So anyway.
I might judge if you do pork rinds.
I'm so glad.
Of course we're going to judge.
I know. I'm just so glad this kid is.
And you got to love it.
This kid right now is out on the Disney magic, so it's all good. We have Ricky from DisneyWorldAfterAll.com, TouringPlans.com, and the Mouse for Less. What's going
on,
Ricky?
That's right. Yell at me all you want about the type of snack that you are eating right now. I don't care. I'm on a ship. I don't care.
You're eating all the fancy snacks right now.
Oh, I am. I am enjoying Rapunzel's Royal Table. I am enjoying Lumiere's. I'm enjoying Animator's Palettes, Cabanas. I mean, what else can I say? It's just a glorious day for Ricky. It's at sea day for Ricky. So, oh, Palo. I'm hoping I'm at Palo. Actually, I'm at Palo tonight for dinner. So, I hope I'm at Palo again for my other at sea day. But I'm definitely eating Palo tonight because tonight's actually Pirate Night, and I don't really like the Pirate Night menu. So, I made my reservation for Palo because after the last cruise, they changed the Pirate Night menu to something that was god-awful, so I said, no, I'm not doing that again.
Is Pirate Night still not the ribs? I love the ribs.
No, they changed the menu last time. You guys weren't there for Pirate Night last year, I don't think. I don't know where you got. You got, that might have been tequila night.
Whatever.
So, I don't think you were eating anything. I think you were in your room passed out because it was me, Hannah, and Paige. That was it. That was me, Brian, Hannah, and Paige, I think, at dinner. None of the adults were there. I don't count myself as an adult. So.
I don't think I would have missed Pirate Night because I always had my costume and I like dressing up.
I'm pretty sure you did. So okay, anyway, Pirate Night dinner was not very good the last time. So I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah. Also joining us, we have the co-owner of the Magic for Less Travel, Pam Forrester. Pam, how you doing on this Friday?
I'm doing okay, but I really wish I was on this ship.
Me too.
So Ricky's making me a little jealous. I knew I was going to be.
You could have joined me. I'm just saying.
I know. When would I have fit that in?
You could have fit it in.
I've been gone 6 months this year, so I have to every now and then come in and do some work. So
you would have lost your residency if you had gone
vacation.
Yes.
Steve is definitely out of vacation time. So,
yeah, my Pam turned to me the other day and said, how much does Steve get for vacation again? Because they're gone again. Yeah, it's like, I don't know how that works. I guess I said he's really good at what he does, obviously, because he's irreplaceable.
That's right. Been there and he's been at the same company for 25 years.
Wow, that's impressive.
So he never took a sick day and he's taken them all in 2018. He's like, I'm just yes. using them all.
Since college, yes.
All right, also joining us today, we have Chef Todd from here in St. Louis to talk some food and wine festival. Todd, how's it going on this Friday?
Doing great. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. We love having you on the show because you are the expert. So folks that don't know you, give us a little background on, your background you're really an expert when it comes to dining. You know what's going on. So, how did you fall into this? You know, I just like to eat cheap food from terrible places, but.
Yes, this is true.
That's
yes.
what I do. That's my thing. So give us a little background on your stuff. Go ahead.
I wouldn't call myself an expert. I was a chef for a long time, so I know how food's supposed to be prepared. So it gives me a little advantage when I sit down to a place, but I take a restaurant for its face value. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sitting at Casey's Corner all day long and eating corn dog nuggets. I like that, as well as going to Citrico's. I love that too. So it's I just kind of take it for face value and judge it on what it's supposed to be and what I know it's supposed to be coming from the kitchen.
All right, well that's what I like, because it's anything, and I truly do. I enjoy Chef Casey's Corner. I'm getting out Chef Mickey's Casey's Corner. Whatever. It's hot dogs. So you were just down at the festival, and if you don't, give everybody your Instagram so they can check that out as the show goes along, because you have so many great pictures of some of the stuff we're going to talk about, probably everything we talk about today.
Yeah,
so
you can look at them while we're talking about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's Chef Todd 55. Okay. That's my handle on just about everything, and there's a bunch of pictures on there, mostly Disney stuff, mostly Disney food, some personal stuff, but a lot of Disney food. So just about everything I tried was on there, good or bad. I put it all up.
All right, so when were you down at the festival? A few weeks back, right?
Yeah, opening day. We went down the night before, like we always do. Stayed at the beach club, got there bright and early, and hit Rope Drop, and the rest is history.
All right, so walk us through the festival. What were your experiences? Give us some of the good, the bad, the secrets, all that stuff.
Well, strategy-wise, definitely want to get there first thing in the morning. If you want to do some damage, you got to get there first thing. The opening weekend, they did open the booths about 10:30, and I think that might have been just because of opening weekend, so I don't know if that's normal. I was only there through Tuesday, so I didn't see anything different. But definitely get there early. There's 15 kitchens on the promenade this year, which encompasses, the bridge, towards World Show, between World Showcase and Future World, and also the festival center. So there are 15 kitchens outside of the actual World Showcase this year. So there's it's almost half. So there's a lot to do. What I like to do is get to one of the ropes at either France or on the other side, just past Norway, right at 10:45. As soon as those ropes drop, just head on back towards the American Adventure and do my damage then.
So really what it is, I mean, if you think about it, exactly what you're describing is basically the theme park touring strategy, sure, but for the food and wine booths. I mean, that's, you got to think, where is everybody else going? I'm going the opposite direction. I mean, that sounds like it makes a ton of sense.
Zig when they're zagging. If you're walking against the crowds, you're doing the right thing. But yeah, that's it. That's my strategy for that. We were there for 3 days, did just about everything. The promenade kitchens get busy because people are already there. They don't, even the ones that don't know food and wine is happening are already in that area. So they will get busy, and they'll be busy all day. So I recommend dividing that area into at least two or three sessions if you want to hit them all. Those crowds are pretty busy.
So you guys were down there at the very beginning of the festival. So they're kind of, and we were there. We used to have Epic October events like in September. We'd go right as it actually were. Ricky, were they in like August? No, I guess they didn't start so early.
It started in August this year.
Yeah, but not back then.
It started in September when we started going. Yeah. So, for Epic October.
Yes, and back. So it's 75 days now, or I don't know. It's a lot.
Yes. But the good thing is there's plenty of time to get to the festival. Even if you're listening to the show today, you could book a trip and get down there and you know what? My biggest suggestion too with food and wine is, and I've learned this from the past, is if you can sneak it in during the week, that's awesome. Like the weekends are nutty. I mean, if you're into that, that's fine. If that's the only time you can get over there, that's fine too. But I agree with what Todd said, food and wine's best experience early afternoon and during the week. I'm getting old, that's kind of my style. All right. So
if you can do it for sure. I mean, and people, say the weekends are crowded, and they are crowded, and it's not a big drunk mess. Like people say, it's still doable. You can't do as much, And if you have a couple runners, some people in your family that can go to one booth and grab something while you grab something else, it's still doable. But the optimal time is certainly during the week and during the day. That's for sure.
All right, so give us some stuff not to miss, because I know we have lots and lots of listeners heading down for the Halloween party for Food and Wine. You know, you got the Wine and Dine race weekend. Tons of the lizards are running that weekend. It's a great combination because you're running, so you can eat all the food and drink all the drinks. So give us some not misses there.
All right, well, my best bet was in Mexico. It was a tostada, so that's right up your alley.
Yeah, it is. I get that. That's what I get at Taco Bell every Monday after we record.
No, I don't think it's the same thing.
I get the spicy tostada from the dollar menu. That's exactly it.
That's definitely not the same thing. Yeah,
not quite a dollar. No, good braised beef. I got some notes here, so I'm going to look off the left. But yeah, braised beef over some really creamy black beans and a really crunchy tostada shell is awesome. Not big, but a good value. 3 or 4 bites. It was nice. Couple different scallop dishes this year I really liked. One was from the Wine and Dine Studios, which is one of the kitchens on the promenade. Had some fresh mushrooms and a little truffle celeriac puree that was really good. One of my favorite dishes, believe it or not, was vegan this year. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a big carnivore, but there's the Impossible Burger. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I've heard so many people talking about the Impossible Burger and how actually good it is.
Dude, I would eat it on purpose. I mean, it was really good. I wouldn't have known for sure that it was vegan. I guarantee it was good. I don't know what's in it, but it's vegan.
No.
I've heard about the Impossible Burger on Tech Podcast.
That's why it's called Impossible.
Because they're saying that could be the food of the future. Like I heard about that on the Tech News Today or something. I'm like, they're talking about the Impossible Burger. So
it's a brand name, right? And Disney is using it because they just put it in a slider. It's got an Asian slaw and some wasabi cream. It's phenomenal. I mean, I would go back for sure.
Now, where do you find that Impossible Burger? Where's that one at again?
Wine and Dine Studio. That's one of the promenade kitchens between Club Cool and the refreshment port outside of Canada. So on that little before you get to the bridge.
Little walkway?
Yeah, before you get to the bridge. There's about five or six kitchens along that walkway there. Flavors from Fires. There's a bunch of them there. Another big hit was the beef stroganoff. Braised beef. There's a lot of braised beef at this festival. That's one thing I want to mention. They didn't get real creative over the off season. A lot of returners, not a whole lot of new stuff. That's not necessarily bad, but if you're looking for new items, this isn't your year. But they did bring back a lot of good ones.
Well, I think they do that a lot because, you know, so many people are like, oh, Food and Wine is my favorite, you know, that kind of thing. And they get disappointed when their favorite isn't there. So
right.
I think that...
Mine.
Yeah, it's totally a fine line that they have to walk of. Oh, well, let's go crazy and put all kinds of new stuff in there. And then you get people who are upset. Like, you know, a few years ago, they took away that fisherman's pie that, you know, Ireland had.
Ooh,
and they haven't brought
that.
It back. And that was amazingly delicious. Not good on a hot day, but really delicious. So
if you only get one day there and you're there for the macaroni and cheese or that and it's gone, then you could be disappointed. So it would be a tough decision. I would like to see them do some new things, but there just really wasn't much this year. Again, everything was good or a lot of stuff was good, but just not a whole lot of new.
Yeah, agreed.
Wendy mentioned the Impossible Burger is also available at Nomad. I didn't know that. That's great. Good to know.
Oh, that's interesting.
Thanks,
Wendy. There's a plant this is hard to say, a plant-based brat at Casey's and Friar Nooks that are delicious too.
Interesting.
Huh.
Those are both interesting.
Cool.
I'm not sure if I'll try the plant-based brat because I can't say it. Impossible Burger is definitely good.
Impossible Burger is hard enough. Okay, so I got this question for you, Todd, because I was wondering this when I was following you on Instagram, because it was a great trip. But I mean, I am not kidding. You had so many. First of all, your pictures, like I'm joking, but like the food that you take pictures of all smile for the camera. Like they're so good looking. Like I just wanted to like get in there and just eat it. It looks so good. But how do you like pace yourself and get around and, you know, really sample all these items? Because I know like I would go in when I go down to Food and Wine and be like, okay, I want to try these 17 things, but then I'm full after like 3 or 4 or 5. I can't pace myself. And then I get tired of walking, you know, walking around, standing in lines. You got to a lot of different items. So what, you know, you mentioned kind of your strategy, but how do you make sure you see so much?
Well, I'm a unique situation. I write a blog for Ricky and I want to make sure I tried everything. So I didn't really do it like a normal, person would do. So I even mentioned that in my last blog. I said, you can do this, but I don't recommend it. It's not for the faint of heart. We had probably, 50 to 60 plates in 2 days. So I definitely don't recommend doing it that way.
And for those who want to read Chef Todd's blog, the first part goes out today. So you can read all about this today. And then the second part goes out on Tuesday of next week. So if you're wanting to see the photos and stuff like that too, and find out a little bit more, you can read the Mouse for Less blog, and you'll get to learn all kinds of different juicy tidbits from his adventures around World Showcase and, well, I guess Future World too.
But yeah, if for the normal person, hit a few in the morning before 11:30, get 3 or 4 kitchens in, and maybe go about your day. Then try to go to the promenade section in the afternoon and have a snack or two. But hitting it all day long is not necessarily the way to do it. Unless that's what you want to do. If you want to, it's fun. You can pace yourself and do it all day. It's a blast.
So do you skip totally, table service dining, counter service dining when you're down there for food and wine? It's just the booths.
I do, for the most part. Yeah, for the first few days, I did. I did hit Terralina the second night. It was one that I've been wanting to try, and that was kind of a mistake. We didn't get to finish much of our dinner, but it was good, really good.
Okay, all right. I was like, was it because it was good, or was
fantastic, I guess. I mean, I just didn't get to finish it all. But yeah, there's a strategy. About 1 year, two years ago, I booked club level room at the beach club during Food and Wine. Really a dumb idea, just so you know. You know, at 7 o'clock, like,
now's not the time for club level.
No, I got a deal on it, and it was fun, but definitely not the time to do it, for sure.
That's a good point. That's a really good point, because hey, let's go down and have some snacks. Oh my gosh, that's what I've been doing all day. I'm so full. And Michael in the chat says, you know, they did Food and Wine, and they basically just did the booths and kind of, skipped the ADRs for that trip. And they said they saved a little bit of money. They kind of kept track of things and, you know, kind of snacked, and that's how they ate. So that's an interesting thing. Pam, you go down.
That's a surprising value.
Go ahead.
Pam was talking about that, the folio you get at the end of the trip with all your costs broken down. I had a ton of them on there, but the total price wasn't too bad for all the food I ate. And all the fun we had, it really wasn't a bad deal. So it can be a value if you want to do it that way, for sure. And the ADRs are expensive. The table services are expensive no matter how you do it. So it can be a value there, for sure.
Absolutely. Pam, well, you guys go down for Food and Wine every year, and you've kind of come up with a strategy. I know you do some sit-down dining. You do the Food and Wine kiosks. And how do you find that balance when you're down there during the festival?
It's hard because, like, Todd mentioned, there's all these little things that you want to try, and, you sort of do it. We sort of tend to hit Food and Wine right when it opens and kind of make a circle. And I always have a few things in mind that I know I want to try. But I am someone, and Steve is too, who gets tired of little things at some point, like little snacks. But like, I want to sit down and have like a meal and like not have to eat on a trash can. And
want
more than 2 sips of whatever beer or wine I've ordered. So at some point I won't say that I do it every night, but I do try to schedule some actual meals in there too, so that we can just sit down and enjoy ourselves. I know. I love that little trash can meme because it is so true. But you do feel like you're like balancing food as you look for some place to like take a photo,
yes,
then eat it,
and then, it's all cold. And
yeah. Exactly right. So, anyways, but yeah.
When you said about the photos, the. Yeah. We were there opening day, and then, the place is crawling with bloggers. And
it's like flies.
I just took my photos right there on the counter at the food kitchen. As soon as I got my first dish, and the cast members even knew to get away. They got out of the light and everything. And I just took my
photos right there. They're like, okay, blogger coming through.
Yeah, they've seen it all day long. They're like, I got to get out of this guy's way. I don't want to shadow.
That's so true. On the first day of the festival, they're probably just like, another blogger, check, got it.
I didn't see Lou Mangiello this year. I usually see him on winning day. I think he bagged him up.
Oh, that's so funny. Couldn't swing a bat without hitting a blogger on the first day of Food and Wine.
Cameras out there. It's fun. Is it overdone a little bit? Probably, because you can do it for 75 or 100 days. But opening day is just like an event unto itself. It's just fun because it's bustling and everybody's there for that, and everyone want to be the first ones. Not that anybody's really going to be the first ones, but it's just kind of fun to watch. It's fun to be there.
So give us a few more like not misses for the festival, because we have actually folks in the chat that are down there right now kind of going around. Good. And people that are heading down very soon. So what else not to miss?
Honorable mentions, Japan. Everything in Japan was good. They have a really good sushi roll there, a spicy sushi roll. They have what's called a beef nigiri. Nigiri is typically raw fish. In this case, it was a little piece of sushi rice with a seared piece of roast beef on the top of it. with some wasabi sauce. It was weird as heck, but really, really good. Everything in Japan was good. Brazil was excellent this year. They have a crispy pork belly. Talking about fried pork fat earlier, crispy pork belly with some good black beans. That's always good. That's a returner again. They had a good seafood stew this year. I think that was new. It was new to me anyway. I hadn't had it yet.
I think that is new this year.
Yeah, I think it was. It was really, really good. Some white rice and fresh seafood and a little white sauce and some micro cilantro on top. It was fabulous. Mm-hmm. They had a little cheese bread. It's like a puff, like a, what am I trying to say, a little popover with some cheese on top. Inside is really good. I tried it all. It was good. China was good again this year. Italy was thumbs down again.
They just can't do it. I don't understand.
Poor country, man. They just can't. They had a Frito Misto this year, which is a mixed fry. It had shrimp and sweet potatoes this year and some green beans. And it was good. It was fine. But, I mean, you can do better than that. And they had a chicken cacciatore, which was like a braised thigh with very little vegetables, kind of a boring red. They couldn't even do red sauce and polenta. So, whatever.
That's such a disappointment.
Italy again. Sorry.
Oh, no. That's such a thing,
man. And Tutto Gusto is so good. The restaurants in Italy itself are just so good. I just don't understand it. But it's been four or five festivals in a row. My cat's going to come up and join us here in a second.
Great. Ricky's probably will too. Let me.
Fire's another good booth right there by the back of Club Cool. Speak of Club Cool, there's a little air conditioned spot there right behind Club Cool in that old Interventions building. They have some beer taps set up there this year, which is nice. A bunch of tables in the air conditioning. And the Light Lab is there too. That's a returner from last year. That's a cute little booth inside the center there too.
Let me ask you this, because I think I missed something. Is there a is there now a pizza window at Via Napoli?
Yeah, Ben.
I didn't even know that was open. How did I miss that?
I never used it. I don't think it's the same pies from inside. I think it's from a different oven. But I don't know that for sure. I've heard that.
Yeah, somebody was telling me about that the other day, and I'm like, wow, because I've always said they needed that. I'm like, hey, that's good.
Yeah, I think it's from a separate kitchen. I don't know that for sure, though.
So fill us in on this stuff, though, that was – you kind of mentioned Italy. You know, they missed the mark, you know, and it seems like this is kind of a historic thing for food and wine. They just – you know, they have great restaurants but don't do it in the kiosks. What are some things that were disappointing that maybe people that you figured, you know, maybe you had high expectations for that didn't meet your expectations, or just something that maybe you don't want to get so hyped up for that you just – they're disappointing on this trip?
Sure. Overall, everything was good. A couple of things that just were not – good at all. The shrimp quesadilla, ironically, in Mexico, the best was in Mexico and the worst was in Mexico too. The shrimp quesadilla, which I had high hopes for, totally bland and boring. Again, this was opening day. Sometimes things change, they evolve over the festival, so it might be good. Now, can you guys hear the lawnmower in the back room? I apologize.
No, it's all right. My neighbor does that to me sometimes too. Like, he comes and cuts the grass right when I start the podcast. I'm like, oh man, there you go, Larry. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it.
But no, the shrimp quesadilla, which is hard to mess up if you ask me, and it was really bland and terrible. In Spain, paella again this year, which is a rice dish. They used the wrong kind of rice. Very dry, flavorless. The paella was bad, really bad. Braised beef in Africa was not very good this year. There's a dish in Germany, and I'm going to try one time to pronounce it. It's called a chicken noodling.
Easy. Okay. Be careful. We got a clean rating here now, Todd. Now, take it easy.
It's like a noodle dish with white sauce and baked in a gratin with ham in it, which sounds like a German macaroni and cheese. Should be great, but it wasn't.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer too. Yeah, like mac and cheese with ham. Hello, that sounds amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
A little something in Germany helped me out, but they didn't.
That's a bummer.
Good desserts this year too. I don't usually do the desserts, but I gotta say that almost everything I had this year dessert wise was really good. So anybody's looking for sweets, just about everything I had was tasty.
So Michael's commenting in the chat that he said that the mead in Ireland, I don't know if mead or mead, but he says very, very tiny. So what did you think about value as far as serving sizes and what the prices were for the festival this year overall?
Well, mead is a drink. It's like a honey.
Oh, see, I don't even know that. I should ask my daughter.
I've never had it. The value on the cocktails and the beers at the actual kiosk is not very good at all. The beers are small and expensive. I don't drink much of the beer from there, as I usually get a beer somewhere else. The wines are very small and expensive. The cocktails are really, really expensive. There's some good ones, but they're very expensive. Food-wise, I think it was a pretty good value this year. For the most part, you're looking at $5, $6, $7, $8 for, you know, a good-sized portion. So stick with the food, pass on the beverages. But if you want one, go ahead and go for it. But you're not going to get the value there. You're just not.
Yeah, I think that on average, like a lot of the cocktails are running like $10-$11 for a very small cup of, you know, and it's like that you can go, you know, to one of the actual restaurants along World Showcase and grab a beverage for the same price, basically, and you get a much bigger
size, drink. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And the wines are small pours and they're tasting, and I get it. That's the concept. But if you did buy the ounce pricing on some of that stuff, you're really not getting the value at all, for sure. It's just definitely another way to do it.
Yeah. So is the Farm Fresh booth still there this year?
Somebody mentioned that, and I don't think it is. I was going to check my notes. I don't think it's there. There was the Florida Farm Fresh was right there in the promenade, and I don't see it. I was going to look at my book, but I don't think it is. Somebody mentioned about the fried chicken on a biscuit with red eye gravy in chat earlier, and that was good last year, but that wasn't there again this year.
That's one, if they had it, that could stay for 10 years. I mean, that'd be something I'd go to. What about the one thing I haven't been there in a couple of years, which I need to fix. I stopped running Wine and Dine a couple years ago, and because of Dopey, because I was just paying too much for races, and I missed the Food and Wine Festival, which is kind of a drag. But do they still have the Hawaii booth with the sliders? I used to really enjoy
those. It's good. That's on my list too. It's always good. They have the Spam Hash, which is awesome. The Kahlua pork slider, good again this year. This year's tuna dish. Sometimes it's a poke, which is like a raw diced tuna. This was a tataki. It's a seared piece of ahi tuna, sliced thinly with some seaweed salad and a little wasabi cream. That's small, but very good. Hawaii nails it every year. They just do a good job. So Canada nails it every year. They have a beef tenderloin dish. I didn't try it this year. I've had it 15 times in my life. I figured this is a good time to give it a break, but it kills. It's the number one seller. I made friends with the culinary director at Epcot years ago, and we've talked in the past, and he said that's just their number one seller far and away. It just flies out of there.
I've had that a few times myself.
It's easy. It's steak and, you know, mushrooms and sauce. I mean, who doesn't want steak, mushrooms, and sauce? I mean,
and it's good, and it kills every year. Their cheese soup, I'm the only one that doesn't like it, but it flies out of there too.
Yeah, that's true.
We are simple folk Americans. You know, give us some steak, and we're pretty set, you know, for the most part.
The numbers are mind-boggling, how much they go through. It's just staggering.
So let me, you know, that's a good question to ask you, because I've wondered this, because it just seems like there's so much going on during the festival, the preparation, you know, because you've been a chef. I have no idea. You know, I just know that there has to be such a systematic approach to keeping that food, you know, prepping it, keeping it safe, preparing it, not in a normal kitchen, but, you know, basically on stage out there on the promenade. Tell us about, you know, your thoughts on how they pull off something like as massive as the Food and Wine Festival for 75 days.
I think for the most part, they do a fabulous job. It's really difficult cooking in a 12x12 plywood box in a 1,000-degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just is. And those kids do it great. And they're all entry-level. All the kids that are working in those booths, for the most part, are entry-level kids, part-timers, and they do a great job. It is all about the prep, though. I don't know where the kitchens are in back. I don't know how far they have to travel. But you mentioned safety. Food safety is a huge issue, and it doesn't take long for something to sit at room temperature and not be, you know, satisfactory health code wise. So I don't know how they do it. I'm glad I don't have to be honest with you. That's hard. It's a difficult job, but they do. And I think for the most part, you know, it's hard to complain about having fun at Disney, but there are some things that don't necessarily cut the mustard. But I think overall they do a fantastic job at all the festivals, and food's hot. Food's, you know, presented the same way. I think they do a fantastic job.
So let me ask you this too. So, you know, along with Food and Wine Festival, just kind of, you know, the way I do it, I just walk through Epcot and go to the booths that interest me as I go. And, you know, that's kind of how I roll. It's very, you know, low maintenance, easy. But they also offer many specialty, you know, shows and presenters. And I know I saw something the other day that they had a kind of an ESPN themed tailgating experience where you could kind of, you know, get some tips there. I thought that'd be kind of interesting. But do you do any of those things, or what are your thoughts on those plus experiences where you can kind of get a, you know, meet celebrities and stuff like that?
I don't typically, just because I don't have time, because I'm eating so much, but a lot of my friends do, and they love them. They, you know, the celebrity chefs will come in and do a demo, or there'll be a brunch demo, or there'll be a wine tasting. A lot of them are held in the festival center. Some were held in specific restaurants, and I get nothing but good reactions from my friends that actually do this. I typically don't. Like I said, I've lived in a kitchen for years. I don't want to live it on vacation, but it's fun for people that have never done it. And I think there's a lot to be learned there. They're pretty expensive, but it's, you know, it's Disney. What are you going to do?
But I think Walt Disney World's a place where you can kind of live out your dreams. And I think that now more than ever, you know, especially in the last, say, 5 years, people now call themselves foodies, and, you know, it's a way of life for them, and they're very curious. You got all the shows on TV, you know, and this is a great experience to get up and personal, you know, because if you want to watch the shows, that's one thing, but now you get to like interact. And Ricky, I mean, what do you feel about this? I mean, with all these, you know, you get to be a part of and kind of live out the dream. It's like fantasy baseball camp for me. You know, you can go down to Food and Wine and really, you know, get involved in these experiences.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to learn more about how they do these things or, you know, get tips and things like that. I mean, I'm not really much of a cook. I can cook decently, but you know, I still need help. You know what I'm saying? So like watching a chef prepare something, it opens my eyes to maybe some of the things that maybe I didn't know that I would enjoy. For example, I did kind of a thing at Paddlefish a couple of months back where they cooked in front of me, taught me how to make some of the dishes and things like that. And I found it to be very interesting because I was able to try things that I didn't necessarily think that I would like, you know, mashed cauliflower. I mean, I can't say that I would make that here at home very often, but after trying it there, it's one of those things where, granted, I haven't made it yet, but it's now in my brain of I actually enjoyed that. So maybe I will make mashed cauliflower here, you know, moving forward in the future. So I think that that's kind of one of the nice things about these kind of seminars is it shows you something that maybe you didn't know that you would enjoy, and it opens your eyes to trying things that that you maybe wouldn't have tried before. And I think that that's such a huge thing about these seminars.
Plus the technique, right? I mean, you can apply those techniques to everything. You're mashing cauliflower, but you can go home and mash any squash. Yeah, so the techniques are nice to learn because you can apply it, you know, across the board.
That's absolutely. I learned about pickling. I didn't know anything about pickling before. I thought you only pickled pickles, but apparently you can pickle lots of things.
You can pickle peppers. Like Peter Piper. All right. So let me ask you this, Todd, because I think that when we think of Food and Wine, like in our mind's eye, at least for me, and it might not be the same for everybody, I think of it as like the adult event. You know, it's like the adult side of Epcot. You travel with your daughter. You know, and what I find is, you know, Mallory last night was making brownies in the kitchen. Now, they were a mess when they came out. They weren't the best looking things because she didn't wait for them to cool, and she dug out the middle of it before Pam and I were on a walk. We went out for a walk. We're like, man, brownies when we get back in. And then we came back in, and she'd already scooped out the inside of the middle of the pan. I was like, what are you doing?
The middle's
the
best part.
I know. And that's what I wanted. But she didn't, like, cut them in squares. She just scooped out the middle, and then it was just a wreck. We had the hard sides. But you know what? Kids are very interested in food nowadays. You know, I think it's this this era because of YouTube and stuff like that. So, Todd, what's it? I mean, you went around with your daughter. So what's that like? Because I think this could be a great experience for kids.
Oh, first of all, you have to get her. I got her fake ID so she can get beer.
Of course,
No, she loves it, and she's grown up with it. She's been to as many festivals as I have, so she likes it, and she understands that it's for us. It's a little different. So she does. She runs and gets food for me once in a while, but she pays attention to the cooks that are back there, and she comments on it. So she learns from it too, and it's a big part of Disney for her. She's definitely a food person.
How do you handle, like, obviously she's probably not so much of a picky eater with those booths. So, you know, does she like to enjoy the dishes like you guys do,
For the most part.
Yeah.
She's no different than any kid. She has things that she doesn't like, but her favorite food is squid. I don't think anybody.
There you go. No, I don't. My Robin doesn't like squid. So
I would try squid. I like seafood. I'd try it.
Like calamari. You'll eat a fried calamari. No, yeah. Her palate's a little different than most people's, but she's picky like anybody else. So, but there's enough there for everybody. So if your question is if you have a picky child at home, there's still something for everybody if you want. You just have to be a little more selective.
And this year, I know that they've kind of highlighted, there's a, I think it's a strawberry. That's the icon for dishes that are maybe kid friendly. So right. If you do have a pickier child, those dishes are going to be highlighted. Yeah.
The strawberry on the passport. Yeah. And those passports are available everywhere. So definitely worth getting to start. A good way to start your planning. There's a V for vegan, and there's the little strawberry, like you said, for the kid friendly, you know, ones that the kids might enjoy. So there's enough out there for them. You've got just seek it out a little bit.
And so, Pam, one of the things I saw this year, which I think is very cool, that Disney is starting to move in this direction, is that, you know, we first started to get those magnets, the pass holder magnets. Those are pretty cool, you know, with Mickey Mouse or Minnie, and they had the holiday ones and stuff like that, and that they're adorned because of listeners that were kind enough to get me an extra and mail them to me over the holidays, and I appreciate that so much. But, you know, for Food and Wine Festival, I think they have a cutting board for AP holders. I mean, that's pretty sweet. So is it cool that, I mean, Disney's finally, I mean, of course, the pass costs, you know, an arm and a leg. You should get a cutting board. You know, they're going to cut your finger off the next time you renew. But I mean, this is a good sign that they're trying to honor pass holders with little trinkets and stuff like this, which the cutting board looks like a nice little touch.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think that, you know, if you look at how many days you could possibly enter Walt Disney World with your annual pass, it's still a fairly good price for that. I mean, truly it is. You know, it wasn't ever meant, I don't think, to be used the way folks use it now, right? They didn't anticipate that people were going to calculate down to the number of minutes you might be in the park and then decide, oh, I'm going to buy an annual pass instead of just buying the pass with my, you know, things like that. So I think it's still a pretty good price for that. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's nice to recognize those folks. And I want to just point out, too, one of the things that I think has changed over the years, especially with food and wine, is now that people that have the dining plan, if you're going during one of those times, consider getting the dining plan, because food and wine makes it an even better value. The fact that you can exchange your snacks for food and wine snacks, items at most of the booths, the non-alcoholic ones, drinks and food, and then also that you're still able to exchange quick service for up three items, for three snack items at the booths too. So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, good reasons to consider that during any of the multi, you know, days of Epcot festivals. Your food and wine credit there, your flower and garden, your even the holidays all have these little food booths, and it's a great use of your snack credits on the Disney dining plan. So look at that.
Yeah. It definitely pluses having the plan. It gives you more flexibility when you're down there during the festival. I totally agree with that. So, Todd, as we wrap this up, you know, we look at the 2018 festival. Lots of folks, like I said, heading down still. I mean, we still have till November, you know, mid-November, and it's only, you know, mid-September at this point. You know, any other tips to give to the listeners? Anything, you know, that they need to think about that can make their trip? Maybe they wouldn't see it on a blog. Maybe it's something you thought of since you wrote your blog. Just something to leave our listeners with to have the best food and wine experience here in 2018.
Well, a couple things. I mentioned some desserts earlier. I'll let you guys find them on Instagram. But all the desserts are good this year. Had a really good time with those. Another thing that's kind of fun, we talked about kids. They do the Remy's Hide and Squeak, the little scavenger hunt. That's available again this year. The prizes are really cute little tumblers. That's something fun for the kids. If you can't, you know, occupy them with food, try to occupy them with finding Remy at all the food kiosks. That's fun this year. Eat to the Beat concert series is always tacky and fun. I mean, some old band from the 70s, right?
I like how you used the word tacky with that.
At your sock hop or whatever. But we usually don't do that. But it's there if the people do want to do it. And there's some dining plan, some dining packages for those too if you're interested. There's a ton to do outside of just food. It's for everybody. There's stuff to do for everybody for sure.
Yeah, it's a great way to see Epcot. I mean, I think that when I think about Food and Wine Festival, I've, you know, two theories on it. One, it's exciting because it's a new way to see Epcot. But then again, you know, when I go and it's not a festival time, you know, not Food and Wine, or now Flower and Garden's kind of become a Food and Wine light, you know, with all the kiosks and stuff. I like to see Epcot just without the booths, you know, just put away, you know, how Epcot should be. But it's a fun way to see it and supplement the experience, because it basically turns World Showcase from 11 countries into, what, like 38 or however many booths there are with kitchens.
That's great.
It's fun.
I can't remember last time I saw a naked World Showcase. I really can. I'm always there for Flower and Garden, Food and Wine, and Festival of the Arts. I don't remember the last time I was there when it was empty.
It was nice in the summer. It was empty in the summer. It's like It literally has a window of maybe 6 weeks, I think, when there's not a food booth out. So enjoy the summer if you don't like food booths.
Yeah, Flower Garden's over in the first part of summer, and then this starts at the end of summer. So what do you got? All of July, part of August.
You have all of July and maybe part of August that you don't have a food booth. Yes.
What do you get? It's obviously working for them, right?
That's
right.
It's Epcot's festival of the non-festival is what it is. You know, that's called the summer. That's it. All right. Well, hey, Todd, thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate your feedback on this, because we know that you are in the know, and we, you know, you share this with us. You get us excited for it. Great pictures, great content. And you're always fun to talk to out there in the Disney community. So again, where can folks follow you one more time so they can check out all the stuff?
Sure. On Instagram, ChefTodd55. I've got a little Facebook group that I have. It's called Chef Todd Eats Disney. We have a bunch of really smart Disney people on there. So if anybody's got questions about anything food related or non-food related, like I said, there's a lot of smart people in that group. If you want to join, hit me up. I don't really do Twitter. I'm same handle on Twitter, but I don't have much to talk about there. So mostly Instagram.
All right. Well, Todd, thanks for coming on and sharing all this with us. We really appreciate it today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Don't forget that today's show brought to you by the great folks over at the Magic for Less Travel. Still plenty of time to get down there for this festival this year. You know, you got till mid-November. There are still rooms. Now, you got to get on it quickly. The rooms are going quickly this fall because a lot of folks want to eat at the Food and Wine Festival and run the races and see Mickey dressed up like, I don't know, in his Halloween costume over at the Magic Kingdom and see Jack and Sally and all that stuff. I mean, it's a great time to go. There's so much going on. You know, you got the weather cooling off finally. Well, it's kind of cooling off.
No, it's not.
It's still hot. Well, November could cool off a little.
It's not cooling off in Florida yet. No, it's not.
Well, you know what? It's probably hot where you are, too, so who cares? Go down and have fun. Eat the food, drink the drink.
It's not because I'm in Canada. It's not hot today. I'm freezing right now. Trust me. I packed all my winter stuff. I actually had to go buy some stuff because I was like, I don't have enough stuff to stay warm.
Ricky Niblett killing my ad reads since 2008. Just saying. Anyway, still plenty of time to go down. Check them out over at the Magic for Less. They will get you in a great package. Charge this one to Pam or to Ricky. This one's she screwed it up.
Magic for Less Travel booked my cruise up to the frigid.
There you go. All I got to say is they're the best. Check them out today at themagicforless.com. Please support the show with our Amazon affiliate link. It's brguestpodcast.com/Amazon. And follow along on the social media. We're at BeOurGuestPod and at BeOurGuestMike on Facebook on Instagram and Twitter. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/BeOurGuestPodcast. We're going to be back again on Monday with a great trip report heading down to Walt Disney World to kick off next week. But right now, it's the weekend. So sit back and relax and enjoy. So for Todd, Ricky, and Pam, I'm Mike. Wish you a great weekend. Whatever you do, stay safe, and we'll see you real soon.
You've been listening to the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the show, please visit our website at brguestpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.